David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. Wanted to continue a conversation that we had kind of started a couple of weeks ago, and it's talking about Black Asian solidarity. And I'm being very intentional about underscoring the word solidarity. As you know, there have been nationwide stories that have looked at some of the upsetting and very disturbing assaults that have taken place in Chinatown, in particular here in the Bay Area, in San Francisco and Oakland. We've seen a number of elders be brutally assaulted, robbed. One person was killed. And the narrative that was put forth was that the Black and Asian community are at each other's throat. There's tension. They don't get along. Yada, yada, yada. Let's bring in some more police and we'll go from there. Because people aren't necessarily in places like the Bay Area, they ran with the narrative and assumed the worst. And we wanted to continue a conversation that focused on the decades-long solidarity movements that have been here in the Bay, very intentional and very vibrant. And even though we have these problems, I would think that when two communities have problems, leaders step forth and they go, let's get people that we know on this side. Let's get people we know on the other side. Let's sit them down and let's figure out how we can craft the solution. We did not see that when these stories first broke from the mayor. But we do see that from community organizers and activists and other folks. And that's who we're going to talk to today. Joining us on the show is the Oakland City Council president now from District 2. Her name is Nikki Furtado-Bass. We also have Arts Commission. His name is Kevin, but he likes to go by the name of Kev. He's a musician extraordinaire, Kev Choice in the building. Also from the city of Oakland, and I forget the, it's the economic, I'm gonna have you explain it, Roberto Bedoya. What is the exact department?
I'm the Cultural Affairs Manager for the Cultural Affairs Division, which is part of the Economic Workforce Development Division.
Economic Workforce, there you go. Okay. And then also joining us, a longtime friend. Some people call her Michelle, but we call her Mush. Mush Lee in the building. So let me start off with you, Mush, because I saw this, this advertisement talking about a solidarity conversation that's taking place later tonight. And I wanted to set the tone. I think I put a little bit out there, but let's get you all to add into this since you all are doing this. And let's start off. What is the state of the land right now, considering the national stories and the various conversations that have been taking place here in the Bay Area?
Yeah, thank you, Davey. And thanks for having all of us on. I want to start by just lifting up the name of Angelo Quinto.
Yes.
Who is a 30-year-old Filipino brother that was, who passed away recently.
Yeah, a knee to his neck.
A knee to his neck.
By the police in Antioch.
Yes. Anyone can Google the story, but it's not very, it's not unlike the story of George Floyd and many other Black bodies across this country, across time. So, right now the landscape, at least in Oakland and across parts of California where our friends and family and we're talking about it is there's a lot of grief. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of reoccurring pain. So this is not new. A lot of people like to say there's a recent surge in violence against Asian elders or Asians, and this is not new. This is since the beginning of this country. And so many of us who have either studied it or lived long enough to see these cycles of violence, it's a re-traumatizing a moment. I'll also say it's a moment of enormous solidarity and healing. In ways that I have never seen. I remember, watching the LA riots in 1992 and my parents, we had friends and family down in LA. And I remember young Korean boys holding guns on their parents' rooftops because the cops would not come to protect them. Nobody would come to protect them. And so things are different now in 2021. I actually see Council Member Fife and Council President Bass, strolling Chinatown together, wearing blazers and drinking sweet tea and just saying hi. there's enormous solidarity. The work that Kev is doing in the community with OSA and across with artists across Oakland that are of Asian descent. And so, there's just a lot of kind of cross-cultural solidarity in ways that I don't remember. A new language coming out that I think is important.
Appreciate that. Let me bring council member or woman, Nikki Fitano-Bass, to the floor.
Davey, can I stop you for just a moment?
Yeah.
It's Nikki Fortunato-Bass.
Was I mispronouncing it like? Oh, I thank you. Nikki Fortunato. Okay. All these years. I apologize about that. I wanted to get your take on things, and I wanted to get it because I started off by saying that this mayor, you know, put a coal in the fire and walked away and didn't take the opportunity to exercise what I feel is leadership. Leadership is knowing the history of a country, knowing the history of a city, and understanding that if there's any sort of drama, the first thing you try to do is you try to bring people together and craft a solution. In this case, right in front of your face, you're standing there, somebody who has this history and understanding, and put a narrative that was in opposition, you know, to the type of conversation I know that you would have and have been having. So I wanted to kind of get the lay of the land as things have been unfolding over the past couple of weeks and where you see things.
I think there's a couple important points to make. I think all of you know that the city of Oakland, thanks to former council member Desley Brooks, has a Department of Race and Equity. And so we have really, as a city, been working hard to understand the current inequity that exists in Oakland. And certainly our Black community has been disproportionately impacted by inequity historically and currently. That's something that we are working to address. And we're really trying to infuse equity in all of our work in the city. And so with that goal, I think it's really important for us as leaders and city officials to really ground our work in that. And along with that work on racial equity, I think it's also important, just given what has been playing out in this country more recently under Trump, to name issues of white supremacy and white privilege. And that's also work that the city has been doing. So it's really incumbent upon all of us to recognize those dynamics, those systems, how we personally interact with them, and just try to do our best as leaders to show up in solidarity and for deep racial equity. And I'll just say that for myself, it's been really important to name the history and the current struggles that the Asian community has with what's been happening. And for me, that means our history going from the Yellow Peril to the model minority, and how this myth of the Asian community being monolith when we're so incredibly diverse, especially when you look at the history of Southeast Asian refugees here in Oakland, we're so incredibly diverse as a community. We are not the model minority. We are often silenced. And those issues are really what I think a lot of the Asian community is speaking up against. You know, there's so many assumptions about who we are as a community, despite our diversity. There's so many assumptions that we will sit back and be quiet. And I think one of the things that's beautiful is that in the midst of a lot of pain and trauma and the need to heal, the Asian community is becoming much more visible. And I also think it's important that the solidarity that does exist in the Asian community with the Black community through Asians for Black Lives, but also in my district, my district borders the Black Arts. Well, my district actually includes part of the Black Art Movement Business District and Chinatown. Districts 3 and 2 include both of those really important communities. And I think that's why it's important for Councilmember Fife and I to come together and say, we recognize that we represent the Chinatown and the Black community in our districts in terms of art, economic development, culture. And I'll just end with There's some incredibly rich history between the Oakland Chinatown Coalition and the Black Arts Movement Business District, CDC. Those communities for years have been coming together to fight for concrete community benefits and the absence of achieving that through the city prior to me coming into office. And so there's deep relationship, a deep understanding that we can work together, and concrete victories that the Asian and Black community has won here in Oakland, recognizing we share neighborhoods, but we also share these goals around what we need to thrive as a community.
Right. Before I bring everybody else in, Councilwoman Nikki, let me ask you this. What's the obstacles for achieving that equity right now? Is there any big elephant in the room that is really holding up the type of progress that would level the playing field and move people in the direction of being whole?
That's a great question. I think there's, as Mush said, there is a lot of trauma in many of our communities because of systemic oppression. And so the healing from the trauma is important, whether it's economic violence or physical violence. So creating a space for healing as well as for celebration, like the event will tonight, is so important because we're all human. So we have to start from that place. And then I think in my role as a council member, we have to also look at systems. And I think that we don't go far enough in terms of our policymaking or our budgeting to look at systems. We tend to look at things very piecemeal versus holistically. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's an opportunity now in Oakland, just given what's happening not only here, but around the country, as we go through our budget process, for example, to really think about how is this budget a reflection of our values? And I know a lot of people say that, but we have to make it meaningful. How do we make sure that we're allocating resources in such a way that our most vulnerable people, our BIPOC communities, see themselves being invested in? And then I think there's this larger issue that is really prevalent, especially in the city of Oakland, of being in a scarcity mindset. Mm. We've underinvested in art and culture or in parks and rec or in other departments that really help people in their everyday lives. And so I'm really trying to look at the revenue side of things by updating our business tax, for example, to make it more progressive. I'm really trying to think about and act on, we're in one of the richest regions in the entire world. How do we move into a mindset of more abundance, knowing that there's so much wealth, and figure out how to share that more? And it's going to take some time, but I think one of the exciting things that the event tonight is going to help us focus on is that issue of narrative. There's a narrative of fear and scarcity. And so how do we move to a narrative of abundance and well-being? Right. And that will help those of us who are policymakers.
What give everybody the information for the event tonight, how they can tap in, either you, Mush, or Councilwoman Nikki.
Folks can live stream tonight starting at 5 p.m. On President Bass's Facebook page. So there's an official City of Oakland page for President Bass, and there's also an event page. If you just look up Stories of Solidarity starting at 5 p.m., it'll go till 6:30. We have an incredible lineup. You don't have to register, just tap in.
Appreciate that. Let me bring Roberto Badea in. He's the Cultural Affairs Division in the Economic Workforce Development Department in the City of Oakland. Based upon some of the comments that Councilwoman Bass has said, what else would you add to this picture that needs to be known by the public?
Well, Nikki's comments were right on. I just want to affirm them. My commissioners, Kev and Mush, have been really instrumental in helping the division realize its cultural plan. The cultural plan was adopted by the city a little over a year ago, called Belonging in Oakland. So what does belonging look like? How do you move forward on belonging? How do you create a sense of well-being and civic civicness and how do you construct a civic narrative of belonging, tonight's event kind of underscores that North Star that we hold in the division and the commissioners hold as they move forward, and moving through a lot of knots. I mean, the world is not perfect, but what we know and what tonight will reveal that artists are fearless and artists believe in beauty and artists believe in justice. And tonight's event will sort of be able to show us and model how our community in Oakland and how Black and Asians work together to kind of foreground what a just city is. So, and in some ways, it's a real pleasure for us to be involved in this event. And I, again, a real shout out to Nikki for kind of saying, yes, let's do this. Right. My commissioner is a willful group. So, you know, they're ready to rumble always.
Appreciate that. Kev, let me ask you this. I know you're a commissioner, but I also know you as an artist. And I also know your work is one that in times of crisis, I've seen you bring people together during elections. We're talking about a couple of years ago when it was violence just in the Black community. I've seen you do healing work around that and bring people together when there was been police terror. I've seen you use your art to do that. We're just joking before we got on air that you were doing that with the pandemic, bringing everybody together. When I look at art, especially through the lens of hip hop, you know, almost immediately I saw Mr. Fab and China Mac, you know, get together and have a conversation and was like, you know, speaking to this issue like day one, as soon as this was popping off, or at least the most recent events. But I also go back to, you know, maybe about 8-10 years ago when a big corporation sanctioned the demonizing and the dehumanizing of people who died in the tsunami. This was Hot 97 owned by MS Broadcasting. And what you saw is a Black Asian coalition led by people like DJ Cuttin' Candy and Rosa Clemente and April Silver and Grandmaster Caz and a whole bunch of people coming together. And not only did they upend that company, you know, by making advertisers, you know, withhold their money, they got them fined $500,000 and they wound up getting rid of the offensive people, including some of the executives, right? All because of that inhumanity. But it was culture that was, you know, the way that people came together. In this case, it was hip hop. Considering what's going on now, how do you see the lay of the land in bringing solidarity, or at least on a cultural tip, and understanding the history that has preceded you and where we're at this moment now? How do you see your role as an artist and a commissioner?
First off, you know, as an artist who first grew up here in Oakland and also a hip hop artist, you know, solidarity, collaboration between, you know, Black and Asian community is not new to me. You know, whether that's in, you know, performing with MCs, Asian MCs, whether that's graffiti artists, whether that's DJs, some of the greatest DJs in the world, you know, from the Bay Area, you know, representing the Asian community. So I've always seen that collaboration in culture and in music. And as far as where I see things today, you know, me being an educator, me being a musician, and seeing an opportunity to show collaboration, even with some of the people who I've worked with, and also to expose how there needs to be more collaboration. And we can talk about it in principle, and hip hop is just one genre, but there's so many other genres. And from this experience, I've learned to go deeper into, you know, traditional, you know, Asian music and Chinese music and show about that collaboration. So it's kind of given me a insight on how I, as an artist, could be even more proactive about showing collaboration between Black and Asian artists during this time. And it's, you know, it's a way of healing. I saw what happened. I saw my council member Nikki out there, you know, walking the streets. I saw how she was, you know, to me it was very disrespectful the thing that the mayor said to her at that press conference. I saw how Carol Fife stepped in, and me being a community member as an artist, I was like, what role can I play to support my council members who are putting their reputations and their lives on the line day to day out in these streets? What could I do as a musician to be an ambassador and also be an example to other artists. Like, this is where we step in to support people doing the day-to-day work out here, you know, fighting for funding, fighting for, you know, protection in these communities, offering ways to heal and support. So as an artist, that's always my goal, is to offer my voice to people who are doing the day-to-day work. And as a commissioner, I'm learning to how my role could be effective as well. And that's one thing I'm really excited about, being a part of this Cultural Affairs Commission, because really three of our commissioners came together and was like, what can we do to show solidarity, to bring healing to our community right now, because it's a very prevalent issue and we had to act quickly. And that's why I'm proud of this work that we're doing and proud of this event tonight.
If you're tuning in, we're talking with a number of people from the city of Oakland about Black Asian solidarity. There's an event that's taking place tonight at 5 o'clock, and we'll give out the information where you can join that conversation. But let me ask all of you, you know, Mush Lee, Councilwoman Bass, Roberto Bayada, Bodea, and Kev Choice. There are two narratives that are running simultaneously. One is a narrative of anger. They've seen videos. They've seen elders who have, you know, lived their lives, who are being brutalized. That's a visceral reaction. And you can understand anybody from any community that would see somebody who they could see as a grandma or auntie or mother being assaulted. I mean, the anger is there. And people are calling for blood in that regard. Like, how dare you? Who disrespects elders that way? On the other hand, you have a population, I think, Nikki, you were saying, been completely ignored. You know, there were no stimulus checks for a lot of people. There was no, you know, opportunity, and people are hungry and they're starving and they're looking around and they're going, you know, whoever's weak, we're snatching, you know, we're going to do what we do. You know, it may be somebody who's Asian. It may be somebody Black. I mean, here we are in a city where, you know, just here, people getting their cavalier, you know, their converters taken every night. You know, we got a homeless population. So there's a lot of angst among that. Then you also have the other thing that, you know, fuels something. And I don't know if it's the people who are doing the attacking, or, you know, who are preying up on folks. But then there's the other narrative. There's a lot of anti-Blackness in these communities. They never liked us anyway. And I think you kind of harped on that narrative that popped up in 1992, you know, in the LA thing. We're talking about healing. How do we deal with those three narratives? I know you touched up on, Nikki touched up on a little bit of this with the inequities that would drive people just to do desperate things, commit crime. But these other two narratives, you know, one of like, why are elders, why are you attacking these folks? And folks who are like, you know, these people never liked us anyway. How do we start to bridge that gap? And anybody could jump in and, you know, talk about a path, you know, a way to, you know, achieving that goal. I'll start off maybe with you, Mush.
It's a fantastic question. And it's a really tricky question. I'll say two things. One is that we've got to keep our eyes on the prize, which is solidarity, and also understanding the systemic soil from which anti-Blackness and anti-Asian violence emerges. And this is white supremacy. This is supremacy or domination of peoples, period. And when we forget that, even the narrative of 1992 was a false narrative. There were a lot of Mexican folks who were also fighting with local Jewish business owners, and that story never got told. So there's this, the system benefits from having this kind of these sacrifices, and we have been made pawns in this. And, you know, it sounds really big and lofty, but there's an economic advantage to pitting communities of color against each other. And when we buy into that narrative enough, we start to reinforce that power or those forces of oppression. And so that's the big picture. When you ask, how do we move forward? I think just like there are forces and mechanisms of oppression that work on all different levels, anyone who studies oppression or racism knows that we can reinforce it on an individual level, on a systemic level, on an institutional and cultural level. The same thing though is true with belonging. I can extend my hand out to Roberto, to you, to Kev, to Council President Bass on an individual level. But on a systemic level, we've got to start thinking about how do we listen to artists and how do we listen to what's happening in our communities and the solutions towards coming one step closer together. I want to open it up, but in 1955, Davey, you and I were talking about this before everybody came on. In 1955, there was a conference called the Badung Conference. Author Richard Wright, who wrote Native Son and Black Boy, I remember being politicized and reading his work at 17. It was kind of the first Afro-Asian conference of its time. It was held in Badung, Indonesia. 27 countries that were just coming out of
colonialism,
white Euro colonialism, came together and said, you know, okay, now we have our independence. We're all the underdogs of the world. How do we want to move forward? How do we take care of each other? Can we even form a profound bond based on this history of exploitation and this history of colonial violence? Does it make sense to do that? The impetus peace, and to also perpetuate the forces of colonialism that each of these countries have
Malcolm
been.
Malcolm X talks about that in one of his speeches, and he says that the European nations were not allowed in that meeting, you know, which was very interesting, you know. So it was like recognizing that there was an interfering force, and how can, you know, groups of people really come together and do things. But to maybe I'll bring in Councilwoman Bass or Roberto or Kev, how do we deal with this anger? Elders are being assaulted. I'm pissed. You know, all this stuff is good, you know, kumbaya, but who's going to stop the assault on these elderly folks? How do we heal that? And is that on the way to being healed, or is that a wide open wound that hasn't been addressed yet? Anybody want to hit that? Go ahead, Nikki.
I'll take a stab at that. This is really hard. You know, my parents are in their 80s, you know, could have been my parent who got pushed to the ground. I think what's really hard in our society is to find empathy with other people, to really look at restorative justice to an alternative to incarceration or medication of people who might have mental health issues, for example. I think it takes a lot for us to come together as a community and to focus on the systems that drive this type of behavior, or the systems that drive us not having our basic needs met. And what I'm hoping we can do as a community, especially here in Oakland, knowing that we often are at the forefront of social movements, is use art and culture and this narrative building to get to a place that acknowledges the anger, allows for some healing, but also really taps into building more empathy for why this is happening. And I want to shout out the Oakland side and Oakland Voices, because around what's been happening in Chinatown, Sarah Bell Lin, Momo Chang, Darwin Bond Graham have been doing some really good reporting on this. And part of what they're doing is looking at, you know, are these acts of violence actually hate crimes? And their report shared information about the person who's in custody for pushing that 91-year-old man. And that person is someone who's been living on the streets of Chinatown, who has a history of being homeless, who has a history of mental health issues, who has been brought into custody other times before. And so if we are able to tap into empathy to understand what motivated that person, we start to recognize the system isn't working for that person. We utterly failed that person as a community, as a government, as a society, because they didn't have shelter. They didn't have their health needs met. Maybe they didn't have a job and they needed a job. And so I think part of this is us really getting beyond this individualism in our society to really understand each other on a human to human level and understand the system.
Right.
That's really what I've been trying to put forward in talking with Councilmember Fife. Let's focus on the system.
Let me ask you this. I'm glad you brought up system. Are we wrong to equate the acts? I think of a few, that's how I read it, to being a wholesale movement where people are saying, you know, in a systemic type of way, these people are a problem, we need to get rid of them. Now, we saw that when people organized after this, the last president, Trump, said the reason why we have a pandemic or this flu, it's the China flu. And you saw militias and you saw groups of people organize and say, those people are to blame, let's go get them. And you saw an immediate increase in hate crimes. Is this the same thing? Or is this a scenario where people are like, yo, you live in the hood? You know, your car's getting stolen too. you live in these streets, you live in these neighborhoods, everybody is gonna, you know, get taxed, so to speak. It don't matter. It could be Mush, it could be Kev, it could be you or me. And in many ways, we all have stories that we could tell, you know, just for living in a big city. So what is it right now? Or is somebody sitting up there going, you know, it's a lot of money in Chinatown. You know, this is a vulnerable population, let's go for them. And this is the chatter that people are following and listening to. And, you know, and this is, you know, what we're seeing unfold. So which is it? Is it the hate crime? You know, because go ahead, Kev.
I think it's important to, you know, highlight what Nikki said. You know, it's, you know, and there's people in that area who need support, who need help. Yeah. The homeless issue in our city is out of control. The mental health support for people is out of control. And if you saw that video, my first thought was this is somebody who wasn't in their right mind. So I think we have to start using a little more of logic and consciousness when we're thinking about this, instead of instantly trying to pit two communities against each other. And that's what this event about is, to me, is like changing that narrative, because that's not the truth. That's not the narrative. There is Asian and Black solidarity. We do work together. We live together in these oppressed communities fighting the same issues of poverty, of lack of education, and of lack of jobs and fundings and things like that. So let's really focus on what the real issue is and not try to make it a community against a community. These are issues that are, like I said, systematic. We can even look at what happened last night here in Oakland, California, where not to make it too political, where the school board refused to push an agenda for Black reparations. You know, our students are not being taught. Our students are not given a chance educationally. So that's a real issue we need to look at. How are we educating our students? How are we teaching our kids from the birth of how this Asian and Black solidarity is historically been happening in our community? So it's changing the narrative from what the mainstream media is going to push. And that was really one of my main focuses immediately, was like, how can we change this narrative? Because it's not the truth. And we know that that's just being pushed on us.
Right. That's real talk. And that's as I think Mush was saying earlier, there's a system that benefits when they run with a particular narrative. There's money to be made when you run with a particular narrative. If you have two communities against each other, well, we need more police. We need more jails. We need more punitive type of resources versus, you know, strengthening. And we also know that communities coming together become a very, that becomes a fear for a lot of people in power. All we have to do is look at all the voting laws and all the types of things they're trying to do to divide communities in the aftermath of the 2020 election. More than, what they say, 133 laws on the books, you know, with them, with in mind, trying to divide communities and keep people at all sorts of things. Roberto, I know your time is short and we're going to wrap up, so I'm going to let you get some last comments and thoughts on all this.
After a conversation with one of my elected officials in 5 minutes, Councilmember Reed. But I just want to sort of circle back to Nikki's comment about empathy. How do you build empathy? And also understand, even though belonging is like the North Star, and it's an aspirational, and it can be very feel goody, because we all want to belong, and we know that an important ingredient of belonging is to feel safe. And what does safe space look like, and how do you create safe spaces to realize belonging, that I belong in this hood, I belong on this street, I belong in this city. But also we need to be mindful of the politics of disbelonging. How does otherness happen? How do people get marginalized? The mentally ill, the poor. And what I have deep passion about and deep faith is that my artist community, Oakland artist communities, are fearless. They look at that ugliness and try to make beauty. I truly believe that. And I love what this event tonight will foreground is those efforts. So in some ways, I guess the political mind is also to be thoughtful of disbelonging and the politics of it, and then to circle back to the notion of civic trauma. How does structural systems create trauma? They have nothing to do with the individual. Like, if you're traumatized, you're supposed to solve it yourself. Maybe it was a school, how school treated you. I grew up in the South Bay, Union City, and there was de facto segregation. And I went to, where all the brown and Filipino kids were, there were my classmates, and the white classroom was. So there was a way in which school systems are set up with their biases, and we need to have the strength and political skill set and the poetic vision to kind of move through those systems. And my last comment on this one, I really feel quite good that the city has a Department of Race and Equity that we work closely on to figure out how do we collectively look at some of these structural problems. And it's a lot of, it's not easy work.
Well, Roberto, we appreciate that. I know our time is short and this conversation is just beginning. You can pick it up at 5 o'clock, where they're really going to go deep into this. This is just to give your appetite warmed. So I want to thank you all for coming on. I'm going to give everybody a chance to give their last, jewel that you want to leave with the people. I'll start off with you, Kev Choice. Any jewels you want to leave with folks?
I just want to thank, first Council President Nikki for stepping up and co-hosting this event with us. I want to definitely acknowledge my, my commissioners, Michelle Mush, Lee, and Roy Chan, who have collaborated with me on this and put in so much tireless work behind the scenes. Also, Office of the Department, Cultural Affairs Department, Bedoya, for your work. And really just to the artist community, let's continue to reach out to each other and show the collaborations, to be the example to the community. We are the healers. We are the storytellers. Like, let's be more radical in how we're presenting our art and showing collaboration. Let's not think so monolithic. Let's think more community building when we're creating. So that's really my call to my artists. It's like, let's continue to do this and continue to show the example.
Real talk. Councilwoman Bass, any last jewels you want to leave with folks?
I really want to thank Commissioners Choice, Lee, and Chan for stepping up and organizing what I believe is among the first events of the Cultural Affairs Commission. It's really beautiful that this is an event about Black Asian solidarity. I think it really points to the future we need to be building for Oakland, where we connect with and inspire people through art, culture, and use that power of healing and vision. So I'm excited about tonight, and I hope it will be one of many, many events that really bring our community together.
Thank you for stepping up and being, our council president is trying to hold it down. Mush, you get the last comment and tell everybody how to tap in tonight.
Well, thank you on behalf of the commission, Davey, for inviting us on. And thank you, Council President Bass and Roberta Bedoya and Council Commissioner Choice. I think, the one thing that I'll say is tonight you're going to see some performances from incredible artists. We know that Oakland is rich in cultural voices. And so it's not, we need, 365 days, 24 hours a day to get it all in. So that's just a taste. You're also gonna hear from artists like Tommy Wong and Tarika Lewis, leaders in the faith community that are doing cross-cultural work. An artist like Tohi Lee, who received a grant to do anti-Black work specifically in Asian immigrant refugee communities in Oakland. So in addition to some of the beautiful healing art and poetry you'll hear, you'll also hear about artists who are thinking about systems and how they use cultural strategies to transform systems. There's this narrative that artists don't think systemically or that we don't care about policy. And part of tonight is to crack open that myth as well. So join us, everyone out in Oakland and beyond. The event takes place tonight. It's Thursday, February 25th, starting at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And you can catch the show tonight, the town hall and conference on President Bass's Facebook page, as well as the event Facebook page. If you look up Stories of Solidarity, API and Black Artists in Oakland Unite.
There you have it. I want to thank our guests this afternoon. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.